Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Hello, Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host Han. Han, how are you?
I am marvelous, Jim. Good evening.
Good evening. We'd like to welcome all our listeners tonight. We have a interesting, exciting subject that will be a miracle if we get three quarters of what we want to talk about done in the first hour. Materials. Material selection is always one of the most exciting. Obviously, this is Straight Talk episode number 28, but materials are always one of the most exciting aspects of a project. But the real big question is, what material is the right one to use? And it has a large ramification on the success. So tonight we're going to talk about some of the things that we've seen, some of the things that we've worked through, what we've personally specified and like to see, and kind of go over the criteria. We evaluate our material selections on a three-point criteria. The first is the initial look. That's item number one. That's evaluation criteria number one. Number two is performance. How does the product perform? And that has to do with functionality along with, its warranty period and longevity, those kind of things. And then lastly is maintenance. What do you physically have to do to maintain that product so that it does in fact perform? So that's our three criteria that we're going to address tonight in all the material selections and locations, because Han, we know this, that every material doesn't always work in every location, and nor should it. But there are some unique materials that actually, if you look at them, might be used in some locations that are typically not, and they actually perform very, very well. And we'll talk about those tonight. But first, let's talk about exterior. Han, exterior of the project is always an interesting thing, because let's say you're doing a new build and, obviously if you're doing a renovation, the exterior is already fixed. But if you're doing a new build or you own a building and you want to change the exterior, what have we used before? What have we seen? And so let's kind of just quickly go down the list of the exterior products.
Now, Jim, when we talk about materials, it's an exciting topic to discuss, is because there is literally millions and billions of products that you choose from, and it could be extremely overwhelming. It's exciting because there's so many different things to choose from, but at the same time, because there's so many different choices, it become one of those one of the things like, where do you start? What would be right? What would be wrong? One of the things that Jim did not put on the list of criteria costs, and we're going to skip right by that, because this is about the right product for the right performance for what you need, and cost is another issue that we're not going to get into. So from the exterior, Jim, why don't you give them your favorite first three, and I'll give my favorite first three that we see on the exterior that we often.
Right. Well, the first three that we've seen and or used obviously is brick. So some kind of masonry product. I'm going to lump that together. You've got brick. You've got concrete block. You've got a ton of other variations of that, including materials that are manufactured that provide a masonry type exterior. So you've got that kind of material. Then you have a metal material. Could be a lot of things. everything from sheets to siding to panels, those kind of things. You got metal. And then, of course, you have sidings, like wood siding or vinyl siding, those type of. In general, those are the three major materials that you stick on the outside. Now, obviously, there's some other more hybrids, but those are the three that we usually work with it.
So because the nature of our majority of the dental offices that we have worked on, they are smaller in scale. Most of the owner relay or look at their building or the finishes of building more closely to a residential structure, okay? So the traditional material that Jim was talking about is, you know, your brick, your concrete block. You know, there's a gazillion way to do to, you know, for concrete block to make, that can be used to make the building look really, really cool. The, you know, and the hybrid materials that Jim say that are man-made, not so much because everything is pretty much man-made unless it's wood. But you know, that are more in the green category per se. Now for me, the other material that I often see and like to see is more glass, because I think glass is one of those material that I love the idea of bringing the inside out and the outside in, and have that glass to. You know, to of course keep the element separate. You know, a metal that could be a number of different things, but specifically, if you look at metal in general, the public think of something like a barn siding or a metal siding. I think of really high end what we call metal sandwich panels, which come in the shape of about an eighth of an inch to about 2 inches thick. You know, their performance is just fantastic. Their pricing is also fantastic. But those are hybrid, high-end, you know, material that are rarely seen on dental offices. But we'll welcome a client that come and say, I like it to make it look really, really neat, and I like to explore and do things that nobody, none of the other dentists have on their building. We'd love to talk to you about that. Okay. So
let's look at brick, for example, or masonry. Mm-hmm. Brick or masonry, the initial look is going to be the initial look. There's really not much you can do to that. Obviously, you can adjust the pattern or the style, the grout joints, those kind of things. But that's your initial look. In the way of performance on a brick or a block masonry exterior wall, you know, it's been around for eons. So it is a well-performing product. It'll function well. It's durable. It'll take abuse. It'll be there for quite a long time. It's something that has stood the test of time from that regard. It does have a traditional feel, typically. You can get some bricks, and especially if you do it in unique patterns and unique kind of mortar joints to make it look more modern, but typically it has a traditional feel. And that could include all the way up to stone. The old stone houses and those kind of things, you can take that same kind of look and create that on the exterior of your practice. From a maintenance standpoint, all of these products we just talked about have very little maintenance. Matter of fact, they have almost no maintenance in the sense that you don't have to do anything to them other than keep them clean. So in some regions of our country, you'll find that sometimes you get, because of the environment, you'll get some mold growing on the outside of the building, that green algae stuff. All you have to do there is wash it off with a special washing agent and hose it down, and you're good to go for another year or two. So there's no need to put anything on top of a masonry product like brick or block or stone. Now, if you go into the more manufactured products, and I'm talking about things like cultured stone or cultured brick, these are products that are thinner. They're applied to a different substrate. They're not full dimensional brick or stone or block. Those products may or may not require a need for a sealer. They may require a whole lot of other possible performance issues. And of course, if you run into a situation where you're painting a masonry wall, then that becomes another whole issue altogether, because then we jump into the idea of maintenance. No matter what you do, if you put paint on a product, plan on redoing it sometime in the future. Now, that may be 1, 2, 5, 10, whatever years, but you will have to repaint eventually on any product that has to be repainted. Even that fabulous stuff, Rhino Shield. Have you heard those advertisements, Ron? 25 years Rhino Shield. Well, basically, that's just a ceramic coating, the same kind of technology that they used to, that they put on the space shuttle on those shields, a ceramic coating. It's a dense, high, solid ceramic coating that they create paint from and put that onto the wall. It's a very exceptional product. It's also pricey, but it is an exceptional product and will last a whole bunch of years. That's why they can say, 25 years warranty on it. So, now, what's the best application? Well, that's a little harder to talk about because it depends on what you want to accomplish, what look you're trying to accomplish, and what's your environment around, what the rest of the buildings around your property looks like, what's the zoning and ordinance are within your area that require you to have a certain material. I mean, in some cities that we worked in, they have a criteria of you're only allowed to use this, and this. Or I've been in the locations where you're required to have over 50% of the wall has to be covered with brick. No questions. It has to be brick. So, you have to work through those kind of things to be able to make the right selection on what's the best. Full dimensional stone, full dimensional brick, which means the stuff that's, 3 to 4 inches thick. It requires a thicker foundation that goes down to the footer. The manufactured cultured stones and bricks do not require that. They're actually adhered to the wall. So it's a different system, but bottom line is they all perform pretty similar from that.
Yeah, from a durability standpoint, they have very comparable performance. Of course, the installations and method or the installation assembly will dictate how each one of those products need to be designed and maintained. But overall, clay product and concrete products are just, they're almost bulletproof. Right. And Jim, that's why I say almost. The cultured stone, the thin brick, Jim, they do make a thin stone veneer. Okay, so instead of having a full stone product like brick, you can have the veneer. So all that is very traditional, traditional feel, traditional aesthetic. It's something that are very, very structured, very warm to, and appealing to look at.
Yeah, actually used and specified a thin granite that basically was less than a half inch thick, applied to a layer of fiberglass, like a shim sheet, that was then applied to an aluminum honeycomb grid system, and we clad the outside of the building with that product. And the reason why we went to that product is weight. Obviously, you can get a whole lot more weight savings by having a thin product like that as opposed to a full dimensional stone. A stone panel, of the same size would have to be maybe 4 to 5 times thicker. So, you know, you've got the idea of if you go up, you know, multiple stories or even a story itself, it's just the idea of the weight that's involved. So there's a lot of cool things that are out there, but those things come at a price. Metal panels that you were talking about, the sandwich panels, those are expensive things. And we're not going to talk about price, but at the same time, you kind of have to evaluate those a little bit. Let's talk about quickly about roofs, because what we really want to jump in is to the interiors. The interiors were a lot of so many products are out there that we want to talk about. But for a roof system, there's a bunch out there. Obviously, you've got an asphalt shingle system if you have a sloped roof. You have a metal roofing system, which could be a ton of different profiles. And then you have, if you have a flat roof or a low slope roof, you know, then you have the solid sheet, EPDM, PVC, all those kind of fun things. And then, of course, you have the spray-on roof systems when you come to the flat system. So from a shingle standpoint, Han, I mean, there's a billion of them out there, and they've been there for a lot of years, and it all comes from the residential side.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of choices, you know, again, the typical product that you probably see on a dentist's office would more than likely be shingle most of the time. Once in a while, they might splurge and go with metal, you know, a standing metal seam. Of course, you know, the traditional stuff that Jim just mentioned is used all the time. And, you know, once in a while, you get into the exotic stuff, you know, like metal tiles. And I'm talking about hybrid alloys and not your, you know, your granule coated steel, treated steel, but, you know, exotic zinc and things like that. If you go into things that are so unusual that you don't have the skill or the labor force do not have the skill to install them, then they become a problem, very risky to do. But in terms of the normal, stick with the normal stuff like asphalt shingle or fiberglass shingles and stuff like that, they in terms of performance, they all look similar in appearance. Of course, you've got different colors and architectural grade and all that, but the performance-wise, if you don't go up there and run all over the roof, you should be able to get about 15 to 20 years, give or take, depends on where you are in the country. If you're down in Florida where the blazing sun, or perhaps out in Texas, the life of those shingles become less. If you are in the area where you have hail, that's going to be a lot less. But, you know, you can rely on the performance of those material, the roofing material, for, you know, a decade, two decades, or longer. It just all depends on what you use and whether it applied appropriately for the roof, the design of the roof that you have on your building. I get that covered, Jim? Jim?
There we go. One of the coolest things on the shingle systems that are out there now is a new. It's not new. It's been around for a while, but it's really catching on. Is the it's basically a metal shingle. It looks like a shingle when installed. It's been impregnated and coated with a stone chip and ceramic surface that is extremely high performance. And when it's all said and done, unless you knew better, you wouldn't know that it was wasn't an asphalt shingle roof, but it has a 50-year warranty. So unlike a traditional shingle system, which, you know, you're right, if you get a good one, you're getting 20 years plus. This thing has a minimum of 50 years. So something to think about. It's obviously a possibility that's out there.
That particular roofing system you just talking about with the, you know, with the granule cover or coating, there was a building in Savannah that I've seen since then, you know, since the 70s, okay, and they had, and it has the same material. Once in a while, I used to live next door to it too. They just kind of basically take a a hose and wash it down once in a while. They don't do anything to it. It lasts for decades, okay, with no problem at all. During the storm, it doesn't get blown off. It's very durable, but it's worth, it's certainly worth the investment in having.
Well, it's worth looking at. It's definitely worth looking at because its price has come down from what I understand, and it is something that it's starting to compete with asphalt shingles. So from a metal roofing standpoint, you've got all kinds of panels out there. The biggest thing you want to make sure is that you get one that has the appropriate kind of warranties, because the big issue with those is fading of the finish. These panels are painted, unless you go with an exotic material like copper or zinc, which is an uncoated, unfinished material. So 9 times out of 10, you're looking at steel or aluminum that has been painted. And that paint coating is the weakest link. So from a fade standpoint, that's the issue that you really have to run into, is what's going to happen with that roof over the years and years and years, and what's it going to fade? How much is it going to fade? And so evaluate it from that side. From a maintenance standpoint, you do absolutely nothing to it. You really don't want to be up there on them. You don't want to do anything to them. If, for example, they happen to get dirty, you spray them off with a hose, that kind of stuff. Your flat roof systems, your EPDMs, and those kind of things, there you want to look at warranty, because not every product is the same, and the warranties are not the same, so you want to evaluate your product with a warranty for the performance. So make sure you specify, I want to have a 25-year warranty on this particular product, and that it's not one that has all kinds of exclusions in it, so that basically becomes useless. Because these roofs are mostly all about performance. They're not about looks. You don't see them. It's about performance.
And in terms of warranty, that – typically more so important for the low slope or the flat roof, that if you have a building with a flat roof. Shingles, typically it's a warranty, the manufacturer warranty, the product for, X number of years. But when you have a flat roof that has membrane roofing, it's the warranty. There's two portions to the warranty, just the material, and material and labor, and the labor in itself could cost a lot. So if you have that kind of building, look at the warranty for both material and labor. And I was actually, Jim, I was really surprised how inexpensive it is for the warranty.
Yeah, it's an insurance policy.
But the insurance policy, I think it's less than the cost to have an extended warranty on your car.
Sometimes.
Okay.
Sometimes.
I guess it depends on the car, right?
Yeah. All right, let's jump into the interior. First thing you do when you walk into the building is you walk through the vestibule. So let's talk about
vestibules.
You
should have one.
Well, we talked about that. Go back to our previous episodes. We've had all kinds of discussions about those kind of things. But, yeah, you've got a vestibule. What's the most important part of the vestibule? The floor. On? What wouldn't you say? What do you do with the floor?
I think this is where it's one of those really underutilized space vestibule, because a lot of building owner and designers always look at vestibule as a premium real estate that they don't want to relocate just for people in the past too. It serves multiple functions. But let's look in terms of flooring. When you walk into the vestibule, this is your chance as a visitor to the building, to kick off the snow, the dirt, the mud, whatever it is that you're bringing to the building. This is where you kick it off. Most vestibule is about 7 feet deep, and that's about 3 steps, okay, 3 strides. So, that by providing a vestibule, you kick off a lot of debris that can bring into the building and damage the rest of the material indoor. The one that naturally you can either throw a floor mat, which is, in my opinion, is god ugly and awful and dangerous. So if you're going to do a vestibule, the product to do is to have something that allow the visitor to kick off the dirt and the debris and the snow and the water and so on. We look at walk-off carpet. That is the material of choice. Okay, it can look pretty. You can even have your logo, you know, imprint on it and stuff like that. It comes in multiple different colors, different texture. So it's almost like carpet, but high-performance carpet. Walk-off carpet is what you want to use. It allows you to also, it comes in a couple of different formats, whether it's bright loom or roll or tile, so that if you have a spot that gets damaged for whatever reason, you can rip it out and replace with new. But this is your first line of defense for the interior building, your vestibule. If you,
and it's
you know,
the first
look.
It's the first look of the building when you walk in. When you walk into the building, the very first thing you do is you're going to look down and see what that floor is like. And if it's a nasty mess that you're tripping around, you set an impression that's pretty poor. So you have your initial look, your performance, having to do with this walk-off carpet, and then obviously the maintenance. Han, you talked a little bit about the maintenance. If the product becomes damaged, you can yank it up if it's a tile and just replace another one. Obviously, it's something that has to be swept.
Yep. The maintenance of the walk-off carpet is no different than taking care of your carpet, regular carpet. You vacuum it. Okay, you steam clean it. It's just pretty much very much like taking care of your regular carpet.
Right.
Okay.
We've seen so many times where you'd have like a hard surface, like a ceramic tile, for example, or some other product that's down there, and then they throw these walk-off mats that you get a service to come in and change out periodically. Those things are just lack of a better term, crap. You know, they're
hideous. It's like walking on a dirty sponge.
I'm
a little opinionative when it comes to that stuff.
Well, I knew you didn't like them, but it's like, really, you want to tell our listeners really how you feel?
Yes, they're like a dirty sponge.
Yeah, they're drunk. Now, there are some high end systems that we've seen used before that we're really not fans of, and that's those recessed grid systems that effectively create a small pond underneath of a walk-off grid that more than likely is an aluminum kind of product that has little strips of carpet on them. And so they're designed so that heavy amounts of water or snow would go into this basin below and either evaporate or drain away. I don't see the need in the application for that in a dental office. You're not getting 100,000 people a day coming through the doors. I mean, that's something maybe you'd look at for an airport, not for a dental office. And they're very high maintenance. If they don't perform properly, they become a mess and a tripping hazard. So not something that we would recommend at all, would we, Han?
We would not use it. Mainly, one, it costs a lot. It costs more to put it in. Two, it's noisy. It's very noisy. Actually, when you get into, if you design a lobby or a transition area for an airport or a mall and stuff like that, you have the distance from the front door into the interior is a lot further. So people kind of like they walk. They don't stand and they stomp. If you have a small vestibule of 7 feet deep, naturally people kind of step in and they start stomping. Those things make a hell of a racket. I don't care for them.
They're noisy.
Okay, so That they are. They are. And
they are.
And you don't see them. They becoming a rarer item to see in both large and small facilities. Okay, so that's the vestibule. Okay.
Yeah. Now, well, actually, there's one area in the vestibule that we need to talk about, and that's the base around the perimeter of the floors. The base is the second area that's going to take the most abuse in that particular room. You've got to be cognizant of it. We've seen a lot. But in a vestibule, we would tend away from not putting in a soft wood or a painted MDF base product that would be susceptible to moisture and water. You want to put something that's more resistant to the water and moisture that's in that area, and it's a little more durable. So, you know, would you put in a tile base? You could. You could put in a rubber base. You could put in a stone. They have some stones and terracottas and those kind of things. But you want to be cognizant of what kind of base you have around that perimeter, because that water, that snow, that ice, that rain, whatever it is going to be pushed out to the perimeter edge, and you don't want that to become a nasty area. So,
yep, it's gonna wick right up into the material and get behind the wall, and then you have other issues besides a rotten wood base.
Yeah,
you do. Okay.
Yeah. So, let's move to the lobby. So you walked out of the vestibule. You're now in the lobby.
The lobby.
What do you see, huh?
I see carpet. Okay. Typically, we specify carpet. Of course, naturally, you can have two types, either a bondum or tile, for the same reason, in that you can, if you run into have a spot that you cannot clean off and stuff like that, rip it out and replace with new. However, the other approach is there's way to repair carpet if it's a bondum. Type, they can cut it out and replace it. But again, it depends on the pattern, the style of carpet you choose. Okay, there is not a one size fit all. There's not a one approach for all. So it of course it's naturally applied to whatever it is that you specify or use. And then there is a procedure, there is a methodology to maintain, to repair, to replace. So, but in terms of material, because in a lobby, there's so much activities going on. Noise is the big issue. You have TV, you have human activities. In a dentist's office, you're going to have little angels running around, screaming, howling, and all that stuff. So you want to make it as pleasant as possible, as safe as possible. Carpet is one of those products. It comes in so many got like thousands and millions of pattern and color variation. You can even have them custom made if you want to spend the money. But carpet is, it absorbs noise. It's very forgiving. It's soft on your feet. So it gives you that feel of luxury, welcoming and things like that. So that's what I normally see. I tend to stay away from hard surfaces like ceramic tile or like stone because I'm kind of like I'm a little bit squeamish about having that type of materials because it become very hazardous if you happen to come in from the outdoor. Even with the vestibule, your shoe still would have a little bit water or moisture on it. And that transferred onto the interior floor surfaces. If it's carpet, then that's fine. But if it's tile and stone, you basically created almost like a wet surface that slipping and falling would be at a greater interval. So I try to stay away from that kind of surface for the lobbies. Carpet is typically the first choice. yes, there's vinyl, vinyl planks, vinyl roll, and all that stuff. It's a little bit more safer than stone, but it has the same. I have the same concern. Okay, so carpet's my choice, Jim.
Right. Now they have. You've seen it a lot. I've seen it a lot, and a lot of times this stuff is propagated by a lot of the TV programs that are out there. But you know, you got things like concrete floors that have been stained, and you have wood products. You even have ceramic tiles nowadays that look like wood. They look like wood plank.
Yep.
All of these are very possible to be used in your lobby on the floor, but you have to be very cognizant of how you use them. And that goes into the performance, because as Han was saying, the functionality of a wet ceramic floor is a danger of slipping or falling and that kind of thing. So you have to maybe use part of your lobby is that product, and the other part is a more traditional product that would not result in that. So maybe you do a combination. Part of it's the wood floor look, and the other part is carpet, so it looks like an inlay. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities, so you don't always have to just say, I have to use carpet throughout. But
yeah, I think the main thing is,
one product over the other, you got to be real careful that those things work and function properly. From a maintenance standpoint, carpet's easy. You just sweep it.
Oh yeah.
And if it's a carpet tile and it's gotten destroyed, you take it out and replace it. Where hard surfaces like stained concrete, ceramic tile, wood floor, all those products need ongoing maintenance. They have sometimes a daily maintenance need, a yearly maintenance need, and potentially even refinishing if you were to use, for example, a wooden floor. So there's a maintenance aspect to those. And then let's jump over to the base. Go ahead, Han.
Yeah, I'm trying not to get me wrong. I'm not against the other products. I think whatever you choose, choose wisely. Choose
right.
With both eyes open. I've used in lobbies for a large headquarter where the entire floor are granite. There is treatment that you use that can be used so that you have the friction that you need, so that it minimizes that potential of falling. But so there's a number of material that are designed to meet those slippage type of situation. So I'm not saying that you shouldn't use it, can't use it, but I'm saying is that use it, at least know the potential, so all the things that can be addressed. Okay,
right.
Jim, the base.
Yeah, the base of this particular space, similar to the lobby, needs to take abuse. Han?
Yeah, you have choices. Definitely, you have choices. It depends on your aesthetic design. Naturally, you can go with wood. If wood is something that and wood does require maintenance. Because every time that you take a vacuum cleaner and bump into it so many times, it might get dinged up and stuff like that. So, of course, the appropriate wood species should be looked at. Then, the natural, the typical rubber base, which is, it's pretty durable. Sometimes some of the comments that I've heard are that it looks so commercial or looks so institutional. Well, it was designed for commercial and institution. And your office, a dental office, is commercial. And it could be institution. It depends on what state you're located in. In the old days, I've only seen this a couple of times, where you actually have carpet base. Okay, carpet base, I've typically seen that in places that have been built around the 70s, the 80s, It's very rare to see that anymore. It's very costly to have, but so the other choice would be besides the wood, the rubber base. By the way, rubber base manufacturer have managed to make the profile of the rubber base to look like wood. It has that wood look, the profile, and it doesn't require to be, paint and maintain like a wood base. So you do have choices. Now, of course, you have tile floor, tile base, you got stone base. So it all depends on the aesthetic the overall aesthetic of the space. So the appropriate material need to be used. It's the lobby is a little bit less. Let me say the abuse on the lobby is a lot less than the vestibule. So it's a little bit more forgiving. Naturally the lobby is a place that you want to really, really show up and dress up to convey the overall aesthetic and the quality of your practice. So you can spend a little bit more, give more attention, spend a little bit more or invest a little bit more in the finishes in that space. Hey, Jim?
All right. One area that we've seen in lobbies that you want to be careful of is the wall surface at about the top of the chair. There's a tendency that that area gets a lot of abuse because of chairs that are moving around and they're rubbing against the wall. And so sometimes you see installed what's called a chair rail or some kind of protective material to be able to at least be a little bit more durable for that application.
That is the quickest, most economical way to address those conditions, and that exists in every lobby. Okay,
right.
As long as you have a chair, and a lot of time it's an afterthought too. You pick the chair. Does the chair? Can you rock on the chair? If you rock on a chair, it's going to be greater damage. So furniture is a totally different topic, but you can. There is material. In terms of selecting the covering, but the wall surface itself, the material, the drywall. There are high performance abuse resistant drywall that can take the abuse that the normal regular drywall that you typically find in every building, where a chair rubbed on it would damage it. So, your design team should look at that as a way to address that issue without without adding other impediment on your wall. Well, naturally, you can protect your wall with a lot of different materials, but the wall takes a lot of abuse, particularly in the seating area.
Right.
So,
well, let's jump to the front desk. That's probably the most important element within your lobby, because it's the very first thing that your patient, your new client, your person walking in your front doors for the very first thing is what they see. Now, obviously, we've talked about before, the first impression happens within just a few seconds as somebody walks into your space. What surface would you put on the top counter?
I look at how do you maintain it, okay? So the easiest things to maintain is the solid surface material. What I mean by maintain is that if you nick it, if it gets damaged in any way, it can be repaired. I mean, this thing is almost magical. You typically hear the word corian, and that is solid surface material. The trendy stuff would be granite or stone product. Anytime that you deal with stone product, it has a limitation in the size. The bigger the piece, the more brittle become, the more expensive become. So let's say you have a check-in counter that are 14 feet long. Somewhere in there, you're going to have a seam if you use stone. If you use glass, Wood is a little bit more free. Wood can be achieved without seam. So, but the typical product that that we use is three. If budget wise, you want it to look like stone and you don't have the budget, then you go to plastic laminate. Okay. If you want it to look like stone, but you want to be able to repair and all that stuff, you use Corian. If you want to have stone like all your neighbors and all your peers and colleagues, including your home, you go with granite, okay? Or, go up a bump and go with quartz. But those are the material that you typically find. The transaction counter is the first thing that your patient will see. So you dressed up a little bit as far as the counter is concerned, okay? You can have that stone look without the cost. And that can be done with plastic laminate. It doesn't, and the things that we haven't covered is that if you own the building, okay, then it's almost your forever office. Then I would look at investing to higher quality that give you the longevity and all that stuff. If you're leasing space for 10 years, get this stone-like look in plastic laminate. And that way, when you're done, you don't cry over how much money you left behind. And when your lease is over.
So scratching, right? is our biggest concern. Scratching
yes,
and that surface is what will, you have to look at performance and obviously the area of maintenance on, how do you maintain a product? If it's plastic laminate and it's scratched up, the only way to fix it is to replace it. If it's solid surface, you can in fact resand and buff it out. If it's stone, it can be repolished, but that's more labor intensive. Now, stone scratches, but doesn't scratch as easily as a solid surface would. It's just a matter of what you run across that thing. You can scratch stone, and you can scratch it, some people would say, surprisingly easily, and you can, but those are the three materials of the top surface. Now, there's another important surface that is part of your reception desk, and that's the front wall. Now, that front wall could be a whole lot of things, and we've seen a bunch, everything from copper panels to tiles to plastic laminates to metal skins, plastic laminates that look like metal, you name it, wood planks, it could be a bazillion different materials.
Or if
obviously,
you're really cheap, you just paint it.
Yeah, and it could be painted drywall. It could be wallpaper
yes.
for that matter. Now, evaluate each one of those based upon the initial look. Paint, wallpaper, those are least durable. That front wall is going to take the second most abuse of all the surfaces in that lobby. Because everybody coming up to that front wall, whether it's a kid, whether it's an adult, they may have something in their hand. They're going to bang against the thing. The kid down there is potentially kicking it because they're bored to death. They're acting up. I mean, that kind of abuse can scar, can damage that particular surface. So it has to be looked at. And then from a maintenance / buildability, and that's a weird word, buildability, constructability.
Constructability.
If you have a 14-foot long curved reception desk, laminate panels don't come in anything more than 12 feet long, if I'm not mistaken. I think you maybe be able to special order a long one. But let's say it's longer than
12 is all you can get.
Yeah, and so you have to have a seam somewhere in there. A butt seam where you put the two edges of plastic laminate together and glue them together and expect them to hold, don't. It will open up. It will look like crap. It could happen, in the first month. It could happen in the first year, but it won't last. So you have to really, really think about what you're going to put there. And from, you don't want something that's rough and that's going to catch clothes or abrase somebody's hand, if they rub against it and it's like, oh, you don't want that to happen. So, you know, there's a lot of really cool materials, but you have to evaluate each one of them based upon our three criterias and how best they're going to work for the look that you want. But you really have to think about what you're going to put in there. Like you were saying, Han, the perfect scenario. If this is something that you're leasing and you're out of there in 5 to 10 years, you know, maybe not spend the large dollar, but spend something that's moderate. But if you're going to look at this is my forever home, you know, maybe you really need to think about, I need to put the very best, longest lasting material there because I don't want to replace it. And I want it to look good every day, all day, every day of the year.
And still, you know, and endure for a long, long time. There are products. Let's simply say you rent the place, but and your budget is tight, and you want to address the concern of abuse and maintenance and all that stuff. There are paint systems that you can use that are virtually bulletproof. Okay, hospitals and institutions use it all the time to convert and retrofit space without demolitions, right? Okay, I'm going to keep some secret to ourselves, but they're out there, you know. So talk to your team about what you want, what you like to have, what you're trying to achieve, and what your budget is, because you can do a lot of wonderful things with very little money. It doesn't have to be, you know, expensive to be good. Okay, your front desk is important. You said, go ahead, Jim.
Very. Very important. The next criteria, the next item on our list is corridors, specifically the corridor floor. What's your thoughts on that? Yeah,
I think you can go pretty much with anything because you already, you know, this is typical when you say corridor. We're talking about, you know, once you pass through from the lobby into the clinical area. So we're talking about the clinical corridor, okay? The flooring there, it all depends on the space itself, whether it's open, high ceiling, low ceiling. Noise is a big issue, so typically carpet is used to address the acoustic problem when you're in a dental office. But you can have pretty much anything you want, okay? Anything, virtually anything. Typically, we use carpet because it's softer on the feet and it'll help to absorb noise. And noise is one of the biggest problems in a dentist's office. You can, of course, you know, the trend right now is vinyl, luxury vinyl planks, because everybody got to have that wood look, because that's the trend. I would encourage you to go beyond what is the hottest trend. And because the trend only lasts a couple of years, wherever you at, whether you, if you lease, you're going to be there, you're going to be there for at least 10, 15, 20 years. If you own it, you're going to be there for, you know, 20, 30 years. So I ignore the trend. I look at the material, how it performs, how you maintain it, and what, you know, what investment is needed so that I can meet all those criteria with as little headache as possible, and it's out there. So trend is the last thing that we typically chase when we do material selections.
Right. Jim? Well, the next area could actually be a whole show in itself, and that's your operatory. Most important is the floor. So what would you say about the floor, Han?
Yeah, I think there's a huge debate on what would be the appropriate things on the floor. If you approach from the noise standpoint, there's only two products that I can think of that help to tamper the noise: carpet. And the other one is cork. Okay, they serve one purpose. They have other issues. In my opinion, the area in the operatories or the entire building that are subject to the highest abuse is directly under the doctor's chair and the assistant. You're on it. You're sitting on a chair with caster. That caster is spin and rotate, roll back and forth all day long in an area no larger than 1 square yard. Okay, that is the area that gets beat up constantly. So when you look at the foreign material in your operatory, you look at performance. Naturally, aesthetic is important. But in performance, how would that floor last? Static load is very important. That static load means how would the weight and the constant rolling back and forth on that floor, how would that floor hold up? Wear layer is important, but static load is much more important. The higher static load, the better the floor will endure. So vinyl luxury vinyl composite planks is right now is a big thing. You can get it to look, it's looking like wood. It looked like stone. It looked like pretty much anything that you can imagine. So cleanability is a big thing. So a hard surface of luxury vinyl plank is and composite flooring. That is an area of material that we typically use because you have chemical, you have resin, you have all kind of stuff that may fall on the floor. One of the big concerns is that you drop your instrument, would it damage it? Regardless of what material is on the floor, the likelihood that it gets damaged, probably yes. So try not to drop them. But in terms of the maintainability, a resilient flooring or luxury vinyl tile plank would be the ideal product to use. Carpet, it's gross. It is absolutely gross, okay? Because it's another dirty sponge. That's just my opinion. You can use it, make sure that you make sure you have a good maintenance program in place so that you don't have a material that just collect all of this nasty stuff in it. All right. So, Jim? Jim?
Honey, you're there. Okay, I'm sorry. How many times have we had clients come to us and say they had to have ceramic tile in their operatories?
I think the bottom line is we educate our clients. We explain to them the pros and cons, and they own the building. They make the final decision, okay? So if they come and they say, hey, I want to have I just bought a boatload of marbles and I want to use in the operatory. And I say, it's your building. Okay. We can only make the recommendation based on our experience and let you know the good, the bad, and the ugly of certain material in a certain environment. But we would not recommend hard surfaces in the operatories. Because it's a work environment that you have to maintain. You have to clean. It gets subject to chemical. A lot of use. That floor is the most abused floor in the entire office. So, ceramic. Well, if you have ceramic flooring, has joints. Every time that you roll over that joint, you feel it. Okay, and you get annoyed, and then it's almost then you can't concentrate on your work. Why would you put joints into a surface that you're constantly rolling, roll in a chair with caster over it all day long? It doesn't make sense. Dentists are supposed to be intelligent people, all right? Using ceramic tile is not an intelligent decision. Okay, this is straight talk. We are talking straight. I would not use ceramic tile on the floor, okay,
right.
In your operatory, okay? Save it for someplace else.
Right. Well, and from a performance standpoint, obviously you've got the issue of that joint is the weak link. Whatever material, fluids, whatever, get into that joint, you have to find a way to clean it out. And it's more difficult than it is in other products. We've looked at and we've seen the vinyl plank go in, the luxury vinyl plank stuff. the big concern there. And it, you know, it's a product that potentially could be used. It's a lot harder of a surface, so it will bounce noise a lot more than, like, say, a carpet tile would. The vinyl product has to be and have a very durable top surface, a wear surface on it. Because, Han, you were just talking about that caster on that chair that's rolling back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, hundreds of thousands of times. One, you have to make sure you have the right casters for your chair. And two, that caster is where the damage is going to happen on that vinyl plank. So I guess we've learned that you have to be real careful that you can't just get a any old vinyl plank surface that has a minimal wear surface on it, because it won't last. It will get worn through. So you have to go to the trouble of getting the commercial, high-quality, wear-resistant, top-coated vinyl plank system if you expect it to survive in that environment.
Now, Jim, some of the comments that often, I think aesthetic, if you look at from aesthetic and function, okay, and performance, you have to be approach things more logical than emotional, okay? If you look at an environment similar to a dentist's office where you take care of your patient, hospital is the first thing that comes to mind. And hospital, they have gurneys. I mean, those babies are heavy, and they roll it around in the hallway all the time. Well, you don't do that in a dentist's office, okay? The cleaning, the aseptic protocol is different in hospital than dentist's office. I myself prefer, I don't like joints. I don't like seams. So I try to do things that are more institutional in this performance. The flooring material, the plank is very common. It's more economical, and it's used a lot in dentist's office, and it held up well. There are real goods that can be cut into tiles or leave in large roll format that have very few seams at all in a treatment room, and it comes in multitude of colors, textures, and patterns, and you can do all kind of funky design with it if you want to, and they perform beautifully in under the caster because it was made for hospital environment for beds and gurneys. And it costs about the same. So, you know, I encourage you to look at the material not just from a trendy standpoint, but from a performance standpoint. How often do I need to clean this? How often do I need to wax this? And, you know, and would it generate more noise and things like this? So there is product out there that meet all the requirements. One thing that I have had discussion with other dentists about, and because they often say, I can go to Home Depot or Lowe's and pick up the stuff and put it in my office. Why can I not? Floating floor is something that once in a while kind of creep up and kind of catch you, and you have to kind of knock it back down into the hole. Do not ever put a floating flooring system in your treatment room. Okay? It's noisy, and it's not made for dental treatment areas. It doesn't have the performance, and it's very noisy. It's made more for home or retail spaces, but not for caster type of setting where you roll on it all day long. Okay.
A very important point to take note. A very important point to take note of is if you're going to go with a vinyl or a sheet good, meaning a plank or a sheet vinyl, that is obviously, as Han said, has to be the hospital grade, high performance, very durable product. You have to make sure you have the right subfloor underneath of that product. It's designed to go on top of a concrete floor system, most likely. And so typically, we don't install concrete floor systems in dental offices unless it's a slab-on-grade. If you have a basement or if you have a crawl space, you typically have an OSB board or some kind of sheathing on top of your floor joist. That product, a vinyl sheet good or a plank system, is, you have to check it, but most likely it's not intended to go directly on top of an OSB board because the OSB board sheathing is too soft and won't take the abuse, and you'll end up, you could theoretically create ridges and divots into the product through the sheet into the OSB board. So keep that in mind when you're looking at whether I'm going to put in a vinyl or sheet good or plank, whereas if you were to put a carpet down, the carpet, especially the high quality carpets and the carpet tile, can go directly over the OSB. So just another point from that regard.
That's a very good point, Jim. Your substrate, the quality and performance of the best material relies heavily on the substrate that it's applied on. Okay, of course, you know, there's ways to address the requirement if you choose a certain material, but do be mindful of the things that Jim mentioned about, because plywood and OSB material, it move. Every imperfection in the material would, what they call it, telegraph onto the surface of your material. So yeah, it's important, important factor to pay attention to when you choose this material.
Excellent. Well, we've gone over our hour, Hans, and obviously there's a billion more things we could talk about, and maybe we'll save some of those for our next episode. But anything you want to leave our listeners with in regards to the finishes, specifically the materials?
I think when you look at materials, again, there's two ways to think about it. That is this an investment or is this a cost? If you're gonna rent the suite or the office space, I don't see the necessity to dump a lot of money into the material. But you still can have good material for a low cost. In terms of selecting materials and things like that, there's so much stuff to choose from. Look at performance first. Okay, aesthetic is a matter of, it has a short life. It's like a brand new car. After about 6 months or so, you don't wash it every other day. So aesthetic is important, but it's how it hold up and how it perform. In my opinion, it plays a bigger role. Maintenance is a big thing. If you don't maintain, regardless how much you spend on the material, if you don't maintain it, it will become a headache for you. The three criteria that we talk about: aesthetic, performance, and maintenance. You can't have one without the other two. Okay, so choose it based on your highest priority, what you what you're willing to do, and then choose wisely. Have fun.
Absolutely. Yep. And this is fun. It is one of the most exciting aspects of a project when you're actually looking at and selecting material, and it becomes real, and this becomes, this is what it's really going to look like, and this is what I'm really going to put there. But mostly, resist the emotional decision making, as in, I really like the look of that. If it doesn't fit the three criteria that we talked about, initial look, performance, and maintenance, stay away from it because it'll just be headaches. So hopefully it's been interesting.
Hopefully it's been interesting. Finish him.
I was saying hopefully it's been interesting. Everyone has had an opportunity to learn a little bit, and we just wanted to thank you for spending your evening with us. We'll be back again next week. You can always get a hold of us at our website, www.hjtdesign.com, on our 800 number, 866-213-1268. So with that, Han, say goodnight and let you have the last word.
Appreciate you plugging in for the last hour or so with us. It's been a blast for us. Love this kind of stuff. Until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.